injury lawyers Mike Riley and John Walsh.
When you hire a lawyer to help you with your personal injury, you want to know that you'll have that lawyer's personal attention. With John and I, that's exactly what you'll get. With many firms, the lawyer that you see in the ad is not the lawyer who is going to be representing you in the case.
One of the differences with Mike and my practice is that when you hire us, you'll have us personally involved in your case.
Call injury lawyers Mike Riley and John Walsh at 257-5661 for the personal attention you deserve.
I want to thank Welcome to Another Podcast. It's LiesOffice.com, brought to you by the United Steelworkers. Joining us now, one of the candidates running in the 1st Congressional District, Democrat Kathy Meyer. She's a member of the Janesville School Board and is now running for the seat being vacated by Speaker Ryan. Kathy, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Sly. I'm grateful to be here. Thank you.
So there's primary. Republicans cleared the field. Peter Barker decided not to run. So it's you and Randy Bryce. Can you tell us a little bit about what you think this primary is about and the distinction and the real, what this, the choice for the people of the 1st Congressional District, what it comes down to?
I think that this primary is about the fact that people in the district woke, to use a term that, you know, you see used quite often in our political conversations lately. And it kind of describes the realization that people had the day after the 2016 election, when they realized that basically a con man and a guy that doesn't understand the job ended up in the White House. And so, you know, I think that that when that happened, a lot of people like myself were wondering what kind of response we should have. And I, you know, got involved with a group that I had formed years ago. It was an indivisible type group. And we energized that. But I also started really considering running myself for Congress. I felt as though at that time, you know, we were running against Paul Ryan. I felt as though Trump's election would make people realize just how weak he is and how wrong he was for the 1st Congressional District. And so that's what I think is involved in this primary, is the need for ordinary people like myself to take back control of our government, to bring back the idea of the citizen legislator that, you know, we seem to have lost lately.
What's the choice from the primary? Make that distinction and what you think it comes down to.
Okay, yes. Well, I would say that the difference in the primary is one of experience and winning. So unlike my primary opponent, I have won election. I have been top vote getter each time. And he has run three times and has never cleared 40%. Now, I know why I win. And I think we need to make sure that we put the best person forward in order to win in November. I thought that when we were running against Paul Ryan, and I still think that, because even though Paul Ryan is not running, the Republicans will not just hand over this seat. They're going to work very, very hard.
No,
and go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, the only question I was going to ask you, and you, I would never take away your victories in Janesville. The Republicans can't gerrymander the city, the city lines of Janesville, but they can gerrymander legislative seats. What would you make of the argument that, you know, maybe Kathy Myers couldn't have won those races, that Randy Bryce was sort of running as a token gesture in some of those races?
Well, I think that the idea that he was running as a token gesture, is his argument. But, you know, one of those races was a primary for James or for Racine County, for Racine School District, for the school board. And that you just had to become, you know, you had to come in sixth out of a 10-person field. And he came in seventh. And that's, you know, very similar to my election. You cannot gerrymander the Racine school
right.
district.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, so, and all you had to do is be number six. You didn't have to win just to go on to the general election. And so I don't know why that happened. I just know that I know why I win. It's because I go out and I talk to people, and I always have run incredibly strong grassroots campaigns, and I think that's going to be absolutely necessary here. And, you know, if I could take another stab at it here, the assembly race that he was in I think it was 2012, if I remember right, that was a primary as well. And so that wasn't gerrymandered. So, and he lost that to, I think, Melissa Lemke. So, you know, maybe in one case, I'll give you that. I'll throw that one to you. Yeah, that state Senate race. But there are others? No.
You say experience. Do you think that people care about experience anymore? I mean, I think experience is important, but do you think voters care about it? They clearly didn't care about experience when they picked Donald Trump, well, at least in the Electoral College, over Hillary Clinton.
Well, I think that your question is an interesting one because, you know, I think that it has to be the right kind of experience. There seems to be this tightrope walk, I guess, that's going on right now because you're right. And to be perfectly honest, Hillary won the popular vote. So, you know, experience won out in that case. But I think that people want someone that has a track record of getting things done and, you know, and that kind of experience. They also want people that are different from the usual field of candidate. So, for instance, I am a middle class, 55-year-old English teacher, and there aren't that many of me in Congress. And I also have a track record of getting things done. When I got on the Janesville School Board in 2013, I was playing defense, because the people who thought like I did about collective bargaining and were aghast at the effects of Act 10, we were in the minority. And so I played defense a lot in the first couple of years, and then I went out and I helped other people run. I helped recruit candidates, train them, and help them win. And we flipped the board in 2015. And that's because I recognized that I cannot do it by myself. And since then, we've reversed health care cuts, we've raised wages above inflation, and we brought back Just Cause in Janesville. And so, you know, so I not only ran on this idea that Act 10 was destroying the Janesville school system because it dissolved the sense of community that had been developed in the district, that is present in really good functional school districts. And I ran on that, I won on that, I served on that, and I was reelected on that in 2016.
Kathy Myers with us at SliceOffice.com, brought to you by the United Steelworkers. We're talking about the race coming up in August. Boy, the primary race comes up awfully quickly now, and it's a very low turnout. Unfortunately, the Republicans moved the date to August. How do you see this playing out? Your opponent obviously has a lot of money. You've been trying to mm-hmm. get a series of debates set up. What's going mm-hmm. on there?
Well, you know, we're raising a lot of money, too, and we have done it all in a grassroots fashion. There's been no PAC money in this campaign at all on our side, and we've raised $1 million with $20 donations being our average and over 30,000 donors so far. And so I'm really proud of that. And it's been a Herculean effort, let me tell you. I do about 4 to 5 hours of phone calls a day. And, you know, then that's the phone calls and meet and greets and all sorts of other grassroots attempts to raise that money. But it, you know, it's not just about the money. I won't deny that money is important. It obviously is, or I wouldn't be spending so much time raising it. But I was willing to go up against Paul Ryan, who has had a lot more money than my primary opponent ever will have. And so, so that didn't faze me. I really think that our strategy to take on my primary opponent was the same that I was going to use to take on Paul Ryan, and that is by having relationships with people at the doors. In other words, cultivating the conversations that we have to have with people, with voters, at the doors and through one-on-one contact. And I really believe that when we do that, we have shown them just how much we care, but we've also started the conversations about learning what their lives are like. In other words, we're talking about not just going to Congress. We're talking about representing people, because we've gone out there to find out what things are going on in their lives, and we're talking with them about our vision and how we think we can help them. And that's not just how you win. That's how you serve. And so that, I think that that's how this primary is going to work out. That's how we're going to win in August, is with that kind of effort.
And there's going to be a debate?
Yes. We've got a forum scheduled in a couple of them in July. One on July 11th, I believe. And what this is a problem with me keeping all my stuff on my phone is that I have to look at my calendar on my phone. So we have one on going to July.
It's
here.
Okay. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. You have a couple opportunities to stand toe to toe.
Yes, July 8th and July 11th so far.
Right. Is it a chance to contrast? Is it a chance to see who has the chops to take on Brian Stile?
Well, I think both. I think that we need to be talking about how we are going to contrast ourselves, not just as our primary opponents, of course, but really how we are going to be able to take on Brian Stile. You know, it's interesting too, because he's a member of the UW Board of Regents, and he's part of this system. He was appointed by Scott Walker, and he's been part of the dismantling of the UW system to the point where, schools like Stevens Point have cut 13 liberal arts majors. And I think that as I'm talking with people, the issue of public education and the importance of it has really come out. And I think I will be a great contrast to him because, here I am, a public servant, a person that has worked for decades to improve public education and to provide a service to her community in that respect, against a political appointee who has been about tearing it down at the behest of Scott Walker.
And says he's a manufacturer.
Yeah.
I met him the other day. He seemed like a very nice man, but I don't think he can
draw. He said that about Paul Ryan, too,
Right? But I don't see any distinction between him and Paul Ryan as far as the issues. They almost seem to be carbon copies. It almost seems like Paul Ryan handpicked him to carry on an exact agenda.
Well, yeah, I think there's a case to be made for that. Brian was even his driver, Paul's driver, I guess, at one point, from what I understand. There's more in the field on the Republican side, so we have to, be aware of that there's no guarantee that Stile will come out of the primary, but I feel pretty confident that he will. I think that, this is going to be really an important contrast here between people like me, who work for public education, and someone that just doesn't seem to believe in it and is working with Scott Walker. We know what Scott Walker has done to public education now at all levels.
We'll take a break. We're talking with Kathy Meyer. She is running for the first congressional seat, currently being held by Paul Ryan in southern Wisconsin. At SlysOffice.com.
I want to thank all the labor unions here in Dane County that help keep SlysOffice.com up and going so you keep up to date, whether it be the Madison Firefighters, Local 311, or the Madison Teamsters, Local 695, or our friends at Madison Teachers Incorporated. These are some of the most active local unions who organize, and constantly stand up for workers. Thank you from Sly'sOffice.com.
You're listening to Sly'sOffice.com, brought to you by the United Steelworkers and many great local sponsors like Madison Computer Works, the Axley Law Firm, and S&R Remodeling. Kathy, I want to talk a little bit about something the speaker did the other day. You know, Donald Trump is an unusually bad president who has done a lot of horrible things. But he's done a couple things that, frankly, previous president should have done, and that was renegotiate NAFTA, which, as you know, has been devastating for Janesville, Kenosha, Racine, Beloit, and even smaller factories of South Milwaukee, Oak Creek. So there's a couple people he's picked to renegotiate NAFTA where they were making some progress, and he was working with progressive Democrats, believe it or not. This doesn't get any media attention, but they were. So the other day, Paul Ryan set an arbitrary deadline, a fast-track deadline, to have the negotiations finished, which means the changes, and some of them were pretty progressive, not all of them, but some of them, will probably come to a grinding halt. So people always talk about Paul Ryan being a water boy for Donald Trump. In this case, he's a water boy for corporate America. And what I'm wondering is that are you going to carry on the tradition of Russ Feingold and Mark Pocan, who have opposed these free trade agreements and push for fair trade agreements?
Yes, I believe in fair trade. I think that some tariffs are necessary, and they have been used by.
We'll get to the tariffs in a minute. I want to talk about renegotiating NAFTA. I want to talk about renegotiating NAFTA.
Mm-hmm. The
North American Free Trade Agreement, and renegotiating some of the trade deal with China that has cost us dearly. Mm-hmm. I know what's happened here. In some cases, there are corporate Democrats that have sort of seized this opportunity to whitewash this and say, hey, if Trump's for it, it's bad. But the truth is, we ended up in the mess we're in right now in Wisconsin, where we've lost 100,000 manufacturing jobs. There were people from both parties that did that, unfortunately.
Right. And I think that we definitely need to be looking at those agreements, and because it's not good for Wisconsin. It hasn't been good for the country, and I don't know that it's seriously helped all the countries involved. I think that we need to make sure that there are protections for our workers, in any of these deals. There are other countries too that we can always look to see what as models, and to make sure that we have, strong manufacturing, and we have, we also have, workers that can have a good living wage and benefits, and that we are not going to be sending jobs overseas. There are places where this is done, and I think that, we need to always, though, regard cause and effect, and that is something that I think is oftentimes lost. I think we get on a bandwagon and we think we have a solution, but we don't think 5, 10, 15 years down the road as to what impact it will have on our local.
Well, I think you're referring to the tariffs here, and of course, here's my point on that. Even if you're a free trader, which I am not, and you support permanent trade status for China, they're cheating.
Right.
They're cheating.
Yeah.
And why should we? Why should we be held hostage by a country that has a terrible record on human rights violations, on labor standards, because a few exporters, in some cases it's ag, but in some cases it's other things. Why should we be held hostage when, in fact, we have tried negotiating with them, and we haven't had any luck? It's been they continue to carry on the same practices, devastating our manufacturing base. Don't we have to have a manufacturing base?
Well, yes, I think we have to have a manufacturing. You need to have a diverse economy, to be healthy. And what you're referring to with the permanent normal trade relations that we've established with China, I think have been a joke. They have, that was what we've had. 18 years of that, and in the meantime. Especially if we're talking about things like steel production, which is, what the tariffs have been about.
Steel and aluminum.
Steel and aluminum. In the meantime, our production, has dropped, but it's not been horribly unstable. But at the same time, Chinese steel production has skyrocketed over the last few decades.
And they're doing it. They're doing it to drive countries out of the steel industry.
Exactly.
Right.
And I've been my union president and vice president. I've negotiated my contract for my school system, and you should have some sort of a hammer, available to you that that you can use to drive, things the way that you need them to. And I think that we need to get rid of that permanent normal trade, relations business with China, because we don't seem to have any, as much of a leverage as we should have because of it.
Let me ask you about, and since this podcast focuses, I'm asking you a lot of labor questions because that's what we focus on in this podcast. The other day, the Supreme Court came out with a ruling essentially saying that workers have no protection in these binding arbitration contracts. It was a big win for Epic. And I'm a little, you put out a statement on this. Your campaign manager pointed out that you had put out a statement, as did your opponents, as did Randy Bryce, as did Kelda Royce and Dana Walks. But we haven't heard one word from any of the members of our congressional delegation or Senator Baldwin on this. And I'm a little troubled by that. Obviously, Judy Faulkner gives a lot of money to Democrats in Wisconsin. But it seems to me that we ought to be fighting for workers. These aren't union workers, but these binding arbitration contracts are an epidemic. They were 2% of the country's population in 1992. Now they're 54%, Kathy.
Yeah. Wow. Well, shame on Epic. Honestly, I'm disturbed by this as well. It is just another way to take any sort of leverage or any sort of influence away from workers. It's almost like it's like creating a situation where they're almost to the point of maybe I'm being hyperbolic, but it feels like indentured servitude. Just where you don't have any sort of recourse for things at all. And I really believe that we're always stronger together. And that's why I really am disturbed by the Supreme Court's decision. And, I think a solution to this would be that employees should, join unions, so that they're not forced to sign arbitration agreements.
Well, it's my understanding there's also a legislative fix for this.
Yeah.
The Supreme Court ruling did not preclude changing either the arbitration law, which was originally for merchant to merchant, not for merchant to worker, change the Fair Labor Standards Practice Act and make it more specific. I'm not a legislator, but there is a legislative fix for this as well.
Right. And in order to get that, we need more pro-labor candidates elected to Congress to, pass a law that prohibits employers from forcing to arbitration to forego people's right to sue.
Let me ask you, before you go, where would you put yourself in the spectrum? I know Senator Sanders' group has endorsed your opponent. Where are you in the spectrum of? I always hate to, it's not simple, but you know, between Hillary and Bernie, where are you in that spectrum?
Well, I am to the left. I consider myself a progressive. I support Medicare for all, and I, you know, support investing in clean energy, treating it like a stimulus. I would call myself. I'm really an admirer of FDR's, Bill of Rights, Economic Bill of Rights, and so I would. That's where I would place myself.
That's a good answer. I thought highly of him. I wasn't around for his administration. I'm not that old, but but I think it is time for a new deal.
Yeah, I think so too. And he did that, you know, he got those things through under immense pressure and opposition, and he did it because he knew it was the right thing to do, and he knew it was about serving people and not corporations. And so I really think we need to bring that kind of an attitude back.
Well, Kathy, you just wrecked your chance of getting Diane Hendricks' endorsement.
Oh, darn.
Listen, we'll talk again before... Go ahead.
I'll cross her off my list.
Okay, her off the list. We'll talk again. We'll get into some other issues. Hopefully you can do this one more time before the primary.
Yes, I'd love that. Thank you.
Okay. Kathy Myers, how do people get in touch with you?
You can go to my website at kathymyersforcongress.com.
All right. Sly'sOffice.com, brought to you by the United Steelworkers.
Sly'sOffice.com.
Thanks a million.
Bye-bye.
Making stuff matters, because when we make things in America, America makes it. American workers and families make it. Our communities make it. Consider this. For every one manufacturing job in our communities, 5 more jobs are supported. Manufacturing jobs pay an average of 10 to 50% more than service sector jobs. That allows working families to support their local businesses, schools, emergency services, and more. Creating 2.5 million new manufacturing jobs would mean at least $100 billion for our economy over the next decade. Domestic manufacturing is the green economy. It's among the cleanest, most efficient, and productive in the world. That's why the United Steelworkers and our more than 1 million members and retirees are fighting so hard to protect and grow manufacturing. Because making stuff really does matter. Join our fight. Visit usw.org and like us at facebook.com/steelworkers. Support American manufacturing. Buy American. Buy Union.